Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Thrive by Five podcast presented by Family Futures. My name is Corey Holcomb. I'm the communications manager here, and I want to say thank you so much for being here this week. Today's guest is a special one. She is the executive director of Children Trust Michigan. Please welcome Suzanne Greenberg. Thank you for being here, Suzanne.
Thanks for having me, Corey. I'm really looking forward to this. I really appreciate the opportunity. Let's do this.
The reason I introduced Suzanne ahead of the topic today is because we're talking about a heavier topic. April is here, and we're going to be talking about Child Abuse Prevention Month and Child Abuse Prevention and Neglect Prevention. Both Suzanne and I recognize that this space can be sensitive for some folks. It can be triggering. It can be a little traumatizing at times. And our goal here is not to sensationalize abuse or neglect, but it's really to help you as parents and caregivers understand some of your own history with maybe dealing with abuse. It's to help you understand your child and help them understand how to protect themselves. And ultimately, it's also to help you understand the children in your life who may be dealing with something of this nature. And I do want to say, and Suzanne might agree with me too, is if you need to take time for yourself in this podcast at any point, hit pause, go take care of yourself, have a snack, you know, recenter yourself. We'll be here when you come back. And Suzanne, did you want to touch on that at all or anything?
Yeah, I think it's really important for people to understand that this will be a difficult subject for some to listen to, but so important for us as parents, as professionals, as people that live in our communities to understand so that if there is something that we can do about it, we want to engage. I rarely speak to someone who thinks that we shouldn't be doing the great work of prevention of child abuse and keeping our kids safe and strong and healthy. So yeah, I appreciate you saying that because I think folks need to be aware of what is about to be discussed. And yes, definitely always take care of you because we certainly can't know, but we appreciate that.
Yeah. So before we jump into the main topic, let's talk about Children Trust Michigan, your work there, what the mission is, because there are some people out there who don't know what it is.
Well, thank you. What a great opportunity. I came here about 6 years ago, and we changed our name in 2022 from Children's Trust Fund to Children Trust Michigan. And many of the listeners may be aware, if it's through themselves or their parents, they might have seen it on the state income tax form as a stop sign where you could donate from your state income tax return and help us prevent child abuse that way. But not that long ago, there was a decision to add other charities there. And so oftentimes that is something people aren't familiar with anymore. But we also have a wonderful license plate that you might see on the road that has a beautiful pinwheel. And we're very proud of Children Trust Michigan because it really is a message that we want to share. And we want this state, we believe in this state, to be a great place where kids can be, to be thriving and healthy and safe, and not only in their home, but in their community. So Children Trust Michigan is dedicated, and it's the only statewide agency that's totally focused, solely focused on the prevention of child abuse and neglect. But we collaborate with all state agencies. Anyone interested in doing this work, we are happy to partner. And frankly, we're blessed to be the network convener of over 100 partners, one of whom is Family Futures, to do the great work on the ground. There's no way that an organization that sits in the state could understand the needs of every community the way that the community does. I often hear it said that the parents and the professionals in that community, they know what the community needs. The resolution's right there. We just have to listen. And so we have a lot of programming that we do. We support it in every county across the state. I'm very proud that there's a prevention voice serving in every community, including throughout the UP. And honestly, it's an honor to sit in this role. I spent 24 years in Saginaw at one of the local programs, our CAN Council there, and believed so heartily in this important work. As we spoke about a little earlier, Corey, I can't think of any better mission to make sure that we provide parents. So much of the work we're doing now is about strengthening families. It's about helping them see the protective factors so that they can make sure that they're the best parent they can be. Because really, that's what we all want. We want to be that person. We were talking a little bit earlier about being a dad to your son and the joy. My children are much older now, but I can remember those joyful faces. And as I look through pictures, I see the four-year-old who just thought I was amazing. We want parents to have that experience. And sometimes all the time, no matter what phase you're in, you need support. So it's really important that we're here and that not only are we here and we're supported through those things I mentioned earlier, but we also do receive some federal funds that we then disperse to all of our programs to do the work because they know what their community needs. And it's just I don't like the word thrill, but honor is the best word I can come up with to be able to interact with you and to work with my team here to be able to make sure that folks have what they need because the communities are counting on you and yes. You count on us.
I love that so much. And one thing you keep saying community, and I love that because I think when people try to define or think about child abuse, they usually think about it as a familial issue. But really, there is a community-wide issue aspect to that as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, our children, they go out into the community. They're out in the schools. They have after-school activities. They work then as they get older. And so to have them with a feeling that they got this, and not only they got this, they got the best support system in the world. And so the community is stronger. Our workforce is stronger. Everything's better if they leave our home. Oftentimes challenging to parents, which is one of the things that I love about supporting parents, because if you have a strong-minded, highly independent, really intelligent, and sure-footed child, that is not always easy. And channeling them and keeping them moving in that direction and doing your best you can, supports are important. Listen, I remember my son doing baseball. I'm like, I have no idea how to teach a son to play baseball. My husband was traveling a ton. I'm like, I'm going to do the best I can. But you know what? I'm going to grab a neighbor. Do you mind throwing some faster ones with him? Because he's not getting it from me. And to understand that it takes that community to make sure that our children are the best they can be, because there's no way one human can do that, all of that. It's just not how I didn't feel it was how I was built. I needed supports. And of course, as you spoke about having our own life experiences, I knew I wanted to do things differently, which meant I had to learn a lot.
I love that so much. Let's start talking about child abuse and neglect. And I think that with that, people often, they think abuse and neglect, they automatically kind of go to, physical abuse, they go to sexual abuse, but, there's a really big broad spectrum of abuse and neglect type scenarios, that exist. And I'd love for you to talk about those, if you could.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I spent 24 years in Saginaw doing a lot of education of professionals around supporting them in their legal obligation, but also so many of them felt their moral obligation to really step in because they were spending and oftentimes more time with the child than a parent was able to. And so when you have that information and you see something in a child, it doesn't always look the same. That would be easy, right? So child abuse is about being non-accidental. It's about having something happen with some intention, although the words are legally non-accidental. And so that also happens, as you were mentioning, certainly physical and sexual abuse. And there's great programs in our communities like children's advocacy centers where families can go, right, and be taken care of and reduce the trauma of having to tell the story over and over. But at the same time, we know that not everybody reports the abuse or neglect because they're not sure if that is abuse because and my family did it to me. And in my case, it was my grandfather and my father. So I thought it was okay. My mom let them in the house, right? So they were that. And so as a child, you think, well, it's okay that so-and-so is doing this. It's okay that that's happening. And in a physical abuse situation, it needs to be a caregiver. You know, we often like in an athletic situation or something like that, that's different. That becomes a police matter. This is when it happens by someone who is responsible for the care of the child. And I think that's a huge distinction. I often wanted people to understand if you're calling 911 about your dad, it needs to go. There's a purpose and a channel that you can go to, like central intake, and make a report, right? It's not something you can just pick up the phone and call anyone. They have a very, very important role to do. But the sexual abuse is also not accidental. It's also a situation that has intent. And it's always about harm or threatened harm to a child. And that is open for people's interpretation, but not legally. Legally, it's very clear. And so when a child feels threatened or is threatened,
yes,
that is abusive. It's often harder to prove. And we often talk about emotional and verbal abuse. I know for myself, that was the longer struggle to address. And still, you know, the hearing things and thinking things that were told to you your entire life, it's hard to erase those things. And so the verbal and physical abuse, I think they do often last longer than any marks that are caused by physical abuse, but they are difficult if they are in isolation. They're difficult to prove. It's quite often that they are done in tandem with physical abuse or sexual abuse. And in my case, I can speak that my sexual abuse was always done with, if you tell, I'll make sure that your mother is hurt, or I'll make sure that this happens. There was a lot of threatening that happened, and it was all fact to me. Yeah. And I do believe, to me, the most important thing about child abuse is if a child decides to tell you that something's happened, believe them, yeah, because you have been chosen as a trusted person in their life. And that is not easy to do. There was a statistic a few years ago that said 1 in 4 children wouldn't tell you. They might tell their pastor, they more likely could tell their doctor, but they're not going to just come out in the classroom and tell you. We all know and remember a special teacher in our life, someone that you trusted. That's the person the child's going to tell. And it may not be Mrs. Smith who's right in front of them. It may be the fourth grade teacher down the way that always asks them, how are you? Or good morning, right? Or asks them to bring the note to the principal's office because you are really well behaved. So it is really something that I think our teachers, our childcare providers, they have to be so attuned, and they usually are, because they're spending so much time and they do care about our children so much. But there's also neglect, which has certainly become something that has gotten, needs to, and has gotten more attention. The difference between being neglectful and being living in poverty, you know, having a situation where a family just does not have the means. And that's one of the ways that in our communities, in Kent County for sure, where we have the Family Resource Center, we can help get the things a family needs to keep that family together, because they're not a bad parent. They don't have the ability, and so they don't have the means. So could we provide that for them? Can we get the right shoes or the right coat or help them with housing so that that family can stay together and be stronger? Because we know there's so much research that says, even though it doesn't always seem to make sense, it's the best place for the child unless there's harm, right? Unless they're really being harmed. And then it's, then there's a, we're very grateful for our colleagues in Children's Protective Services, because they do a job that not many people can do. And I think they're to be respected and thanked when they are able to do their job. And then also what we like to call mandated supporters, you know, making sure that there's folks out there looking for, let's just get them some shoes. Can we just get them some more food? And there's great programs like the Food Basket and other places that really focus on making sure our kids are fed and families have the means. And I've jumped around a little bit from child abuse. Corey, I apologize.
You're totally fine. I love it.
Questioning, but I think it's important for folks to know it just looks so different depending on the child and what they're experiencing. So again, I just want to emphasize, if you have a child that decides to tell you, they've really come, it takes a lot. It's very courageous for them to talk to you and that they really trust you. So please, to tell them that you believe them and that you're going to do, see what you can do to help, is all you can do. No guarantees. Please never, ever guarantee that you can change something. But the fact of the matter is that I know I never told anybody because I thought what's happening in my house was normal. And so I thought all my friends, that's what their dad did to them every night. I didn't get that when grandfathers visit, they do that. I didn't get that that was not a thing. Until literally, I think I was almost 30 when I listened and could hear friends, and male and female, talk about what had happened, or people that I met when I spoke in an audience, and they would say, oh yeah, me too. And I'm like, what do you mean me too? You know, what do you mean? I didn't know that happened. And so it's like this awakening for us that you're not alone. And that is so true. But also our children don't have to endure this. We can make a difference. We can prevent it from ever happening, which is, you know, our life's work here.
Yeah, that, thank you for sharing all that. That is really important. And thank you for sharing that part of your story. I know that.
Yeah.
I know it's unfortunately not an uncommon story either, like you said. And I think people don't necessarily realize too that how prevalent abuse does exist because of the multifaceted aspects of abuse and neglect. And I think to my own personal journey with abuse, and it was more physical, more verbal, and there were definitely good days. And I attribute that to my abuser, for lack of a better word. It's kind of a harsh word for me still to say, but I recognize it as their unprocessed trauma and their circumstances growing up in which they experienced sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, not only from parents, from partners. And so that in a way it trickled down to my life, to where my abuser did not know how to handle their response to things and their aggressions. And so everything that I did wrong as a kid was automatically assumed as their response to disciplining me was based on how it made them feel and less about correcting me as a person. And I think that's really, it's really so easy to injure, to hurt and abuse and to traumatize a child.
Absolutely. Too easy, really.
It's really too easy. And I know people always say kids are resilient. Kids have a compassion, I would say, more than resilient, because especially if it's someone close to them, like in your case, a father or grandfather, they still have a capacity of love for that person. Yeah. And sometimes I'm sure you had that too, where there's a conflict of, this person is the only unconditional love I ever knew because it's my parent, or it's someone who's in my family. So you can kind of you try to justify that experience. And I might be getting ahead of myself in the conversation here, but I think it's important to recognize too, there's a space in your life to recognize, yes, that you love this person because they're your family and that's what you grew up knowing, but you also have to, you can also recognize, yes, this was not what was supposed to happen to me. And I think there's a lot of people really struggle because I think we live in a very black and white world. Again, this is me just speaking as somebody who's not a trained professional. This is a parent. This is a human who's had a human experience. But yeah, I think that it's something we deal with, and we live very black and white. And sometimes we have to kind of live in that gray space and acknowledge that there's space for both processing that trauma, but also like understanding that sometimes we go to bat for those people and defend those people as well.
Yeah. You know, I love this conversation because first of all, the words gray space is where I live. I'm always like, even in an interview or someone's going to hire me or a friendship, I'm like, listen, I don't do black and white because the world doesn't work that way. And to be very honest, you know, when I think about exactly what you're saying about for the longest time, I just thought my mom's my world. Everybody else hurts me. And then you go through the phase of my mom didn't protect me. And then my mom was also mean to some other sisters. She had her own what now is called emotional immaturity, her own traumas, all these things that we can label, we can do research, but at the end of the day, it was harmful, but she did her best. And I think you talked about undiagnosed mental illness. You know, I'm very grateful for your generation and younger who are very comfortable talking about, and I shouldn't say very, more comfortable talking about. You know, I struggle with depression, or I was diagnosed with X and I take some medications and, you know, I really am uncomfortable. I get anxiety in this group. It's like, my gosh, we're giving language to something that my generation and around my years have suffered with, but not been able to talk about. And yeah. I think that also we see that teachers see this in the classroom. And now there's not only did we not have all the good language, but we didn't have that understanding that if you're going to talk about mental, physical health, you really need to talk about mental health. And we need to have services that respect the fact that it exists, and also behavioral health. Like, we have to understand these things, and that our children, our families need all of these supports. But if we could get in the work before and prevent that, our children, our families never come to the attention of a Children's Protective Services report, that's what we exist to do, right? That's what Family Future exists to do. And if a family needs some intensive home visitation, well, then you can do that. But yes, if it's not that and what they need is assistance with housing, there's navigators to assist them to get to that, what they need. And we're really working with our family resource centers, one being at Family Futures, to really be able to say, what is it that you need? How can we be there for you? Not to tell you we have the cookie cutter approach and everybody's going to get the same service, because that doesn't work. The bottom line is that obviously we're all human beings that are all so different. But what we love about our programming is it's so not a cookie cutter. Every county does things just a little different, elevating to a level of standards that keeps us all doing the best evidence-based work we can do, but making sure that whatever you're providing there in Kent County is what Kent County needs. And that means that we, as the Children Trust Michigan and other providers, respect the fact that you are a dad. If we just talk to you about being a dad with your own life experience, you know what your son doesn't have because of whatever it is you're going through. How can we help? Yeah. Or what is it that you're doing really well and you'd like to share with another dad? Because to me, that's the other thing that's new for dads, more of that opportunity for sharing. And I watch this when I watch videos from our fathering groups. I've not sat in on them right now, but I miss that. But to listen to dads talking about fixing the car, going to sports, and man, I wish they would get potty trained, or why can't they just use the toilet kind of thing. And you're like, it's all part of the conversation, but it's in a very different way than moms do, right? It's a very different conversation. And to acknowledge and honor that is, phew, finally, like, let's go. I mean, we honestly, I can remember a day take me back like into the mid 90s, late 90s, when we had Healthy Families America programming and home visitation. Yeah. And the workers would go into the home and to talk to mom, and dad would show up and he'd be like, dad was there. Like, they were so excited, and dad sat down and he was, yes, because I think often, as you know, dads weren't invited. Dads weren't like, it wasn't, they weren't spoken to, they were, yes, spoken about. And so it's now a case when we do our training about strengthening families or protective factors, it's all about including, who are those caregivers for that child? Who are those people that are right around them? And for me, I always talk about creating my own family, like creating people that have served as sisters, brothers, yes, parents, grandparents. But at the same time, when you have a child and you are wanting the best for him, you're just looking for those supports, right? In your own family, if you can learn from them, that's great. I remember buying Parents Magazine and being like, this isn't where my kids are at all. What am I supposed to do? I'm parenting and parents. Oh my gosh. I think I had every, they were so expensive too. I just remember that. I was like, this is crazy. I don't have anybody to call, because it was hard at that point in my life to admit, I don't know how to be a parent. I don't want to do what was done, but I don't know how to be different. And there weren't like home visits and things. I would have been a perfect candidate with my own life experience, but I don't know if I would have been open to it, right? If I would have seen that at that age. But I, yeah, love that it's available now. And frankly, as I say, I'm incredibly passionate and love to be surrounded by people like yourself who believe in the importance of prevention and live it by allowing it to be talked about, and love the Thrive by Five, because frankly,
yes,
you know, it's such an opportunity. I found interesting, Corey, I'm going back a long way, but when we first started in 0 to 3, 0 to 5, and it was like, this is really important to get. I mean, the first time I heard the words infant mental health, I was like, what is that? You mean a baby? And to listen to a specialist tell me that a, yeah, 6-month-old could be depressed was, I was just mind blown, really had no idea that was possible. And then to understand that the circumstances that surround us have so much to do, and how we're treated in utero and all those things make such a difference. Yes. I was like, prevention, prevention, prevention. Like, we can really help moms that are pregnant and dads that are expecting to babies come into their lives, to help them to know how we can do things differently. Or bless you, if you were raised by parents you want to be just like, except for a couple of things, because everybody wants to tweak a little something. But, you know, just that, like, I want to do that right. And so how can we support that in the community? And I often hear from folks like, I don't want people telling me what to do. That isn't the intention of, yeah, parent support and education.
Yes.
It's, where are you and what do you need? And how can we help you to be the best parent? Because your child doesn't need me. They, exactly, need you, right? Right? Doesn't he need you? He wants you.
100%. And I think I love that you acknowledge the mental health awareness of this generation. I'm 37 now, and I'm just so grateful, because I recognize early on, even before I was a father, and especially when I became a father to a young child, is just the importance of making sure that I... Well, let me backtrack with that thought. I was listening to a podcast years ago, and Gwyneth Paltrow was on the podcast. And people have mixed feelings about her, and that's fine. But she was talking about trying to raise a child, you know, through divorce, co-parenting. And she was talking about how trying to bring a child into this world is so challenging, because you have this thing that is a clean slate. It's, how do you teach it empathy and kindness and compassion and goodness and strength and character? And how do you do that as yourself, while like pushing all the crud in your life aside to give them the best possible start to life? And that's so important. And it's a challenge. And we have to recognize that that's a big challenge for every parent. There's no perfect parent. And I always say kind of jokingly that in some way I'm going to be paying for my son's therapy one day. You know what I mean? I'm going to try to minimize the need for therapy, but there'll be things that I'm going to do wrong that he's going to talk to the therapist and say, man, dad did this too much, or dad didn't do it enough. And I have to acknowledge that I won't be a perfect parent, no. But long a time ago, I just realized parenting and caregiving, it all comes down to intent and effort. And if you constantly make the effort, you can mess up a lot of days. But if you keep trying and work on yourself to be the best parent or caregiver you can for that child.
And
yeah.
The gift that I think oftentimes, not to get too philosophical and deep, but the truth is, the gift that we can give our children is our time.
Yes.
That we really, I have seen in my early part of my career, so many families that were trying to figure out how to do the thing for their child. How do I get them, yeah, to the thing? How do I get their, so they want to be this or that. And the truth is, they just want to go to the park and have you push them on the swing.
Right. Yeah.
or play Legos. The number of times my son wanted to play Legos, I was like, I didn't want to do it. Mom's listening. Dad's listening. I don't want to do that. I'm not good at it. My hands are large. And I was like, I can't get these little things, but he would giggle because I would put it together and then it would break and it wouldn't snap and blah, blah, blah. And to this point, I didn't know was I doing it right? I remember hearing a lot of moms in group being like, is that right? Are you doing it right? I'm like, listen, you're doing it right because you're doing it with them.
Yes.
And they're just, the giggle of a 3 or 4 year old is the best prize in the entire mm-hmm. world. When you do something silly, I know you've had the experience, I'm sure you have with yes. your son. The giggle is just, it's to me, that's the gold right there. And to know that you're having that time on the ground. I just recently had two knees because I know that one day when I'm blessed with grandchildren, the most important thing I can do is get down on the ground. Right. When they're 100%. when they're born, of course, but then just when they're 2 and 3 and they want to play, you know, read a story is great, but to really be able to play with them and get dirty or go out in the sandbox, that's what they want. So I think all the things we can do for our children, that's, you know, for myself, I think about that a lot when I was younger, because I wanted the best for them, of course, and I knew what I didn't have. So darn it, they were going to have it. But we were the family that was in the third row at the church and we looked great. We were always dressed good. We had all, it was not, people had no idea. Yeah. My friends had no idea. And so that was not the issue, because we went to Brownies and Girl Scouts and dance and all those things. But it wasn't that, it was what was happening behind closed doors.
Yes.
And those were the days that nobody talked about what happened behind closed doors. Now our kids come to school and some, not all, will talk about what happened. And oftentimes if you're that mom where the kids come to your house all the time, you'll hear them talk yeah. about what's happening in their home. And it really is, I'll go back to the fact that if a child does choose to talk about it, it's a very courageous thing for them to do. Yes. And we now have resources to get them to, which is great.
I love that. Let's kind of touch back on prevention and start kind of focusing the conversation about how people can understand how to help prevention of abuse and neglect. And so the first thing I think of is the protective factors.
Yes.
And I'd love for you to kind of talk about those a bit and how those assist with prevention.
Absolutely. I have to say, you know, we as a movement felt so much about those. We're talking about all the things that parents are doing wrong, right? Even you brought up earlier about how for your own situation, your mom or dad, oh, they did this bad. They were not a good parent. They weren't this. But the truth of the matter is now at this point in my life, I know they did the best they could.
Yes.
And so when you look at a parent and you think about the strengths that they're bringing to that child, it's the old, if anyone's been through a social work class or any sort of training to be a CASA or training to be any sort of emergent person or a volunteer, you know that you're looking at this picture of all the things that maybe don't look great. But what you see is, well, they had food because there's dirty dishes in the sink, or there's a crib, the slide's down. So maybe it's not the safest, but they have a bed.
Yeah.
And those things that we learn to see as strengths, frankly, that's a very simple example. But the truth of the matter is that we really need to help parents see what they bring to this situation and then lean into the things that we might need to borrow or, gosh, don't want to get political in any way, but that village, whether it's yeah. aunts or uncles or best friends or neighbors that you know that you want to be a part because they're a good influence on your child's life. And so yeah. the 5 protective factors are a way to really support and build, I think, a family that can be stronger. So one of the first ones is parental resilience. Yes. And it's really what you and I have been talking about. I remember when I was much younger, before my daughter was born. And I was trying to think, what am I going to do with my life? Right.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm just going to go be a nanny. Wouldn't that be fun? And for some reason, when I went to my interview, I shared about my life experience. And the first thing the person said is, oh, I don't want somebody who's been abused taking care of my children. And I was like, what? I would never hurt a child. Well, all that person knew was that there was the potential, and research shows that's possible. Sure. But the truth is, to be resilient, I had to really address that. So I knew that about myself. And I knew that my tendency were to get frustrated, or perhaps I could get angry in a situation that didn't warrant it, and all that to be strengthened so that we can transform and use those experiences to be a better parent, right? To be the better staff person, to be whatever, take those difficult life experiences and turn it around. And we all have them. They're just different. For me, I could skip all the abuse and just remember being a larger kid and all the name calling and
yeah.
you know, the larger nose or the flat nose or all the kid glasses, no glasses, braces, no braces. I mean, all the things that frankly are kind of upbringing children, like playing at a playground, right? And I don't like the word normal because I don't think we have to be that way, but the fact that it happens is not something that's atypical. Bottom line is that when you look at all those things as an adult and becoming a parent, we need to remember them and then transform them into, I think, being that resilient parent to help build resilient children. So the other part of that is another second one is social connections. And that's really our ability to develop those relationships, those positive relationships. And so that helps us to really reduce stress and keep us from being isolated. I will say that this was probably the hardest thing for me because I felt like when I came out of my parents' home, everybody knew. For some reason, they could look at me and realize I had been sexually abused. I was a bad person, all those things. That's what I thought people saw. So it took a very long time to build a supportive network and to realize maybe someone would like to be nice to me. That's a concept. And that we see parents have that aha moment, like, wow, my best friend could really be that supportive person for me, even if they're not a mother, even if they are only an aunt, or if they are a mother of many children and you have one, whatever it may be, it's like that person can be that sister, maybe, that you don't have a strong relationship with. The third thing is the knowledge of parenting and child development. When I first got into and learning more about the research and academia part of child abuse neglect, it was very clear to me that one of the ways that we as parents were really harming our children is we didn't understand that a 9-month-old is not supposed to use the potty. That's not normal, right? A 3-year-old can't be sent to their room to clean it and expect it to be done. And those things that are not developmentally appropriate, we need to know. Like I used to say to my daughter, you're being a great 4-year-old. Now I need to figure out how I'm going to be a better mom. So hang in there. I'd literally parent magazine, call a friend. It was like phone a friend. Like, now what do I do when she's crossing her arms and tapping her foot and giving me some of these? And I'm like, I now have a super independent 36-year-old daughter who's an amazing person at her position. But the bottom line is there was a lot of learning and channeling along the way. Part of that was just for me to know what's my role, how important her dad was in her life, and that when he set limits and I really could just be quiet and let those limits stand. It's a hard thing because we moms think we got this, right? Mm-hmm. And so to have that parenting relationship, if it's grandparents that are raising their kids, whatever that is, that parents have that understanding that what your role is as a parent and why kids are relying on you for that, those limits and those structures that you're giving them. I think when I just spoke briefly about some simple examples, it's important that we understand their cognitive development, but also their physical development, right? I remember when my daughter was first like carrying a little plate to the table and I'm like, she could break that. I remember someone saying, so? Like, teach her how to do it. Right. If you're worried, just get some plastic plates, like just whatever's healthy for you. I can hear people saying, don't use plastic. But the truth is that, you want your child to learn the things that are about being part of a community, being part of a family. So it can start really, really young, and they love to be a part. They want to be, and to understand that they're capable of that. But also, if your child is someone who maybe comes into a room and gets frustrated and pushes a child or hits a child, they need to understand why did they do that, and what can I do differently, right? So understanding what they're capable of and not expecting more of them than they're age appropriate. So the fourth one is concrete supports in times of need. And that is where I think programs like Family Futures and Family Resource Centers are absolutely at the crux of the matter. The truth is that we need to help families reduce their stress. I have countless stories where we were able to provide things like diapers and food, access to rent and heat and things like that that are available in the community, but they were afraid to go somewhere else. And somehow they found the Family Resource Center, the Family Futures Program. Yes. So now they get these things and now they can save money and get the payment that they need for their apartment or pay for the thing that helps them to keep their family together. And those concrete supports, there is so much good research about how that really helps our kids to stay safe and not be abused and neglected. And finally, I just want to talk about the social and emotional competence of children. Every single day, you probably have better stories than I do that are much more current right now with your 8-year-old. But you look at children and they really develop their ability to communicate and help them learn that emotion you know, I just can remember my daughter struggling with my first child and talking about how to use the language of like, actually, I'm frustrated. And I'm like, well, what does that feel like when you're frustrated? And I'm not a psychologist. I want everyone to hear. I'm not a therapist.
Yeah.
I just knew that frustration ends up with throwing toys or hitting somebody who won't share or whatever the case may be. And so I knew that we had to really teach her how to communicate that, which was oftentimes I'm the one that was chuckling in the corner, frustrated, used to just make me smile, but I couldn't. She was being very serious. And to regulate those emotions, though, and then maintain those friendships and relationships, but also really helping them to channel relationships so they learn from the ones that maybe weren't really nice to them, but also learn from, wow, I really get along with this one. I really have a good relationship. We have a lot in common. I enjoy going to dance with her, or we play out in the yard. I have some kids in our neighborhood and they just play. It's so wonderful to hear them. My mom used to call that happy noise. And I never understood happy noise when I was younger, but I do now. Because when you hear children that are joyful and they're playing, it's just exactly what they should be doing. And so to have them understand the importance of friends and having relationships, but also regulating those emotions, you're going to get angry. What do I do with that?
Yes.
What do I do with that? And to help them, because those are protective factors so that children don't they understand it and not misuse it or don't have it structured and channeled for them, because they're just little beings trying to learn, even when they get to be taller than you, by the way. That will, my son got to be 6'2", and I'm 5'10". I'm not a small person, but it was like, well, you better have gotten respect by then, my friend, because it's really all about him taking care of him at that point. And I could talk about it forever because protective factors are one of the best gifts, I think, to this work.
I think one thing I constantly tell my son is, I say, you know, buddy, this is your first time being a human. This is your first time being a seven and a half, an 8-year-old. This is your first time being on this earth. I said, even though I've been here for 30 some years, dude, this is still, I still say dude with him because that's my generation. But I say, I'm still learning how to be a dad. I'm still trying to figure out, like, this is my first time being a dad to somebody your age. And I'm like, I'll give you grace and you give me grace and we'll figure this out together, you know?
Yes. And, you know, I think that sort of understanding with him to say that, you know, I'm not perfect is such a great message, and I make mistakes and I'm sorry. And I'm going to try harder, or I'm going to do this differently next time. You know, I can remember the first time someone said to me, you should apologize for that. I'm like, apologize to my
dad? Yeah.
It never happened to me. You know, no one ever apologized to me. Why would I, you know, my response was so not one of grace or understanding. It was, you've got to be kidding. And when I saw it in action, when I saw what it allowed for my children to hear and do, it was one of the first times was my daughter spoke differently than her brain was frankly transported from her father. So I didn't, when sometimes she would make an argument or she would share something with me. I was like, I'm not getting it. Like, it's just not. And then she would say, oh, and she'd go talk to him. Like, in 2 minutes, they would be in communication. I'm like, what is wrong? And so I remember it was a counselor whom I tremendously respected. She said, tell her that this is not okay. Tell her that we're not communicating well. And this is really important to me. I want to be in communication with you really well, and it's not working. So let's help each other. Let's figure this out. And honestly, I think she was about 12, and it was the best thing I ever did. Does that mean that 15, 17, 18 were? No, she was not. Like, she was a teenager, 100%. Yeah. But it was that communication that was, it was so important to build that emotional connection for us. I used to always say, my kids laugh, I'll be like, how are you doing? How are you? And they know exactly what I mean. I don't care. Did you get a promotion? How much money you make? I don't care about that. Even in school, I'd be like, I don't care about math class. Of course I care, but I want to know, how are you? And I want to hear, is there something that I can help you? Anything that made you sad today, happy today? I want to know that, because that's, I think, to me, the core of building these resilient little beings. Become big beings.
100%. Yeah, I think, and there's, you touched a lot earlier on recognizing signs and trusted parents and whatnot. And I think there's a lot of ways to help kids with prevention of abuse and neglect. And I think really it's a larger community thing as well. I know one small way I do it in my household, and this is kind of off jumping around on the topic, but I always tell my son, we don't have secrets. between adults and kids, even if it's mom and dad. If he says, you know, don't tell mom this, I'll say, buddy, I'm going to tell mom this because mom and I are partners in this. I tell him, I say, buddy, we don't have secrets. We have surprises.
Exactly.
I say, you know, we can surprise mom with a joke or a prank or a that's gift. Right. But the intention is that they're going to find out sooner than later. And I think that's one way that I do. I make sure I'm intentional with that because even though my abuse was not sexual in nature, I have family who dealt with sexual abuse, both the generation before me and my generation. And so I've always grown up with a really hyper awareness of adults. And I think it kind of messed me up in a way too, like just who could I trust in some ways.
Sure.
But with my son, I'm very intentional about, you know, if somebody's hurting you or threatening you or. The other day we were talking about he wants to do sports, getting a sports physical and talking about, you know, like how what's involved with the sports physical or even we're going to get him ADHD tested. And he was asking if the person in the room is going to, you know, do a physical on him. And I was like, no, he's like, but if they did, could I say no? I'm like, absolutely. You can say no. I'm like, go for it, man. Like whatever doesn't feel right to you. And if mom and dad aren't there, like, we're to help you because it's our job to protect you. I think equipping children to be their own advocates it's hard too because you also, this world is messed up a lot of times. And I think it's hard to find that line of, I know for me at least it is, to find the line of, okay, at what point do I start to have those more intense topics with my child about those things? Because those things can start at such a young age. And unfortunately, my kid is very loud and extroverted. So as soon as he hears something, he will go talk about it with all his friends. So I got to be careful of that as well. But yeah, I think, yeah, I'd love to talk about that a little bit. Just the challenge of equipping your kids to understand. And again, I know I'm leaning on towards sexual abuse more right now, but I feel like that's a big one. But I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are and about how to help equip your kids also knowing age appropriateness.
You know, this is such a great question. And thankfully, more and more programs are being created that are evidence-based so we can teach children very young, kindergarten, we can start talking about personal safety and what's now called body autonomy. So like you just said, if the doctor is going to be doing a physical exam, mom or dad, probably dad for your son is going to be in the room and I may be over here and he's over here, but you can stop at any time. You're not comfortable. Like this is required for you to go play basketball, but I'm going to be right here. And then at a certain age, it's like, mom, get out. Okay. But you have that right. You have that right. And you also have the right. I remember my daughter being very young and she didn't want to kiss and hug my mother. And it was interesting because I was like, why wouldn't you want to hug mom? Nana, why wouldn't you? But she didn't. And then when she did, she was, I don't know, 13, 14. And I said to my mom, isn't it nice that she wants to now? Like, you know that she's choosing this, right? And she decided. And I think your point about him deciding body autonomy, you know, children can't fully protect themselves from adults because we are managing them, caring for them, etc. But to allow them to do that, to say, no, I don't want to kiss and hug. I always say, you have to say hello. We're not going to be rude, but we may not require kisses. We had to kiss and hug everything, you know? And so there was no understanding that you had a right. And a right is not something I hear a lot of parents say, oh, our children, come on, give them a right. There are bills of rights for children. I mean, the UN has children's bills of rights that are internationally accepted. Yeah. The bottom line is, as a parent, the more we can teach them the correct terms for the body parts that they have, mom and dad, we need to get comfortable because talking about an elbow and a finger and a penis should be just natural, yes. Right? And not, if we make a big deal, then they make a big deal. And like you said, then they go run to their friends, talk to their friends, and it's just a body part. And also that makes it possible for them, God forbid, someone does touch them. They understand that they touched my fill in the blank, right? We used to oversaw a children's advocacy center work up in Saginaw, and the names that parents had taught their children for their body parts was mind-blowing over my 20 years. And it was my mission to tell parents, please, 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 because of my own sexual abuse, I was very uncomfortable with some of those terms, but I had to say them in a mirror over and over and over because I didn't want my son to be uncomfortable with the word penis, even though when they're, second grade? It's normal, right? Talking about poop or whatever, that's normal.
Yes.
The truth is, if they got to tell you this horrendous thing happened, or even somebody grabbed them by the arm, but they hit them in the chest or whatever, they have to know that that's their breast or that's their whatever. They have to understand that.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be, as you're saying, age appropriate for sure. you know, we can talk about tummies and we can talk about armpits and things, but we need to teach them the correct word as if it's just, you know, I have some great stories about my daughter explaining to the doctor that, you know, her vagina hurt, but she called it her vagina. And it was like a situation where antibiotics didn't agree. And so there was an infection and needed some help. And so I didn't know, because she was at that point using the potty and I didn't see, right? And so she explained it and I was like, wow. And of course, he was like, I said, you know what? And she was telling the 80-year-old woman in the lobby about why she was at the doctor. And I'm like, oh my God. And all the friends, my friends would be like, did you have to tell your daughter like all of this stuff? Like, who's going to do that? You know, she was curious. And I think that's the other lead for you when you talk about it, Corey, is that when he asks, tell him the truth.
Yes.
You know, a lot of women, we joke about how our parents called it down there.
Yeah.
What is that? It hurts down there. Your knee? What is that? Like, we don't have the language. And so therefore they can't talk about it. And it's somehow bad when in fact they didn't do anything bad.
Yeah.
And I would say that children give us that lead by asking questions. And sometimes parents were like, uh-oh, wasn't ready for that. You know, and you say, well, I got to make dinner right now, honey, but let's talk about that later. And you just, or call your friend or read a book or whatever you got to do, but make it like it's is a normal conversation and you didn't do something bad by asking me this question. Because children, you're going to give them the facts. If we don't answer their questions, they're going to their friends. And that is not a good source of accurate information always. We want to give them, there's some great books about teaching kids about like what happened to my body or this is my body is another one that's just talks about body parts. So it'll help you walk through it if you're not someone, you're not someone who's maybe not comfortable. But I would say that, and then also educating the people around the child so that if in my parents' case, you know, I've taught her that she doesn't have to give you a kiss. Well, why did you do that? Well, here's why. And that's my, it was very hard. It's very hard to a situation where my whole life we were required, like you just would, that's you have to. And so now to understand that my job as her parent is to protect her and take good care and tell this is what I've told her to do. And I've given her the right or the power to be able to take care of her own body. And so those sort of things, they seem really simple, but as parents, the other part is that we can reach under resources at libraries where there's so many good books to talk about so many things. And our local partners on our website, if you go to childrentrustmichigan.org, we have this great map and there's resources in every single county. So if you are curious about some of these things and you want to find out where do I find that, There's either information they can share, tell you where to get it, or there's possibly parent support and education groups. So you can jump in and talk to other parents.
Mm-hmm.
That is a wonderful source of laughter. And I'm like, wow, I didn't do that well, right? I didn't do that well. Let me try that again. We all will make mistakes. You made a great reference earlier about how, I know I'm going to play for counseling sometime. And we don't mean to be flippant about it.
Yeah.
But the truth is, it's the understanding that we can't be perfect. We're doing the best we can. And the acknowledgement that I need all the resources and all the supports, and I'm still not going to do this thing perfectly. I talk to my kids now that they're in your age group, and I talk to them and tell them, we did the best we could. But I also want you to know that go ask for help is completely okay, because there's nothing perfect about the things that we were able to do. You know, your dad's life experience was much better than mine, so he brings different things to the table. But at the end of the day, you're human. And that was a really good message that you shared with your son, because it allows him to be human too. And that is a gift.
I think with, again, we've harped a lot on sexual abuse. And I think with sexual abuse, with physical abuse, there is definitely an autonomy component to it because it affects you. But I would think let's talk about emotional and verbal abuse, because I think how do you teach autonomy or understanding to kids? I mean, you can tell them, you know, people shouldn't talk to you a certain way, but how do you help them understand that autonomy for themselves, especially when it's more about it's more of an emotional, it's all emotional, but this one kind of has more direct emotional reactiveness to it.
Yeah, it's such an excellent question. And it is such it's a invasive and insidious problem that our children deal with from all adults. Whether it's the childcare person that may be not very nice to them, he doesn't have the resources to lean on. Perhaps it's the teacher who just gets really frustrated when the kids won't listen. But it also can be the grandfather who is saying and belittling them constantly out of your earshot. And they think, Grandpa's, that's his dad. Sometimes they don't even know who you are. Like, oh, Grandpa, he lets Grandpa in. He must be a good guy. I don't even know how he's related. They don't even get that yet. And so to me, it's that understanding that no one has the right to make you feel bad.
Yes.
But the fact that you are going to learn from these experiences, tell me what happened, because you look really sad. And I used to always say, tell me. And then they would say something like, the teacher made me go down to see the principal. Well, can you tell me what happened just before that? But yeah, I was sitting in the back, and me and Bernice, we were doing this. Okay, so it was a listening thing. So you went down to the principal's office because you weren't listening. So that helped me understand how going to the principal's office could have been avoided.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. And let's understand that we all have, we're all human. So I remember the conversations about sports. We were talking about sports earlier, and your son, you know, sports physicals, et cetera. But looking at the situation where as they get, it used to bother me to no end if a young sports coach wasn't like, you got this, way to go. Oh, you went the wrong direction with the soccer ball. No problem. Let's go. Good job. Let's get him, turn him around. Okay. You know, we used to put towels, like the Barbie towel on one end and the Batman towel on the other. You're going toward the Barbie. You're going, whatever it took to make them have fun, them have fun. As they got older, I'll not forget sometimes when the kids and their friends were talking about how awful this coach was. They were just terrible. How mean. What makes you say that? And then I would hear the coach. I'm like, they want you to work hard and they prefer to win. When you're in varsity sports, that's sort of the goal, you know? And so belittling children, never okay. Never okay. I just, I never understand it. I don't think it's okay. And that was my job as a mom to be like, you know, tell them you don't really need to sit around and listen to that. I want to know about that. But you don't also get to talk back to the coach. That's, you're not going to holler at the coach. Like, we're not going to do that. But we are going to understand that really that is not a good way to be spoken to. And so let me come and listen. You know, I would warn and talk to parents about, please don't drop your children off at sports until you know the coach, until you know who's going to be with them. You know, it's really, I remember coaching my son's team when they were five, and I didn't know soccer for nothing. But I knew I wanted good sportsmanship. And so I'm like, okay, we're going to cheer the other team on and we're going to help each other up when we fall, because that's all we did. We clumped around the ball and then we fell on it. And, you know, I realized that that was the only thing that I could bring to the table. I needed a co-coach who knew some technique or whatever. But frankly, all I really wanted to teach them was that you're doing a great job and you're working hard. And if you're sitting down in the middle of a game, you're probably going to get hurt. So you need to get up. Right. I'm not going to tell you you're lazy or all those things. That's not the case. You're adorable and you're looking up at the clouds and you're going to get a ball in your face. And for me, as a coach, my job was to make sure they had really a ton of fun. And if they did, maybe they'd come back the next year and have more fun. Right. Stay outside and play. And I do think as adults, we have a lot to say about how children are, how they feel about themselves. We can either build them up or break them down. And you and I both know that rebuilding after being broken is hard, right? It's really hard. And honestly, if we build them up in our own home, out in the world, there's going to be something that tries to bring them down. And they need to be able to be resilient. They need to understand, I got this. You know, I can do this.
I love that so much. And one thing I want to not harp on, but talk about too, because I think it'll go into the next part of this about positive parenting. But you talk about, you know, external adults and coaches, but how do you handle it when you're trying to raise a human who's saying to you, you can't talk to me like that, especially when they get in those wonderful teenage years or the three-nager year? Well, I mean, basically it starts at three. It doesn't really stop at any point, but how do you find that line between parenting or being a good parent, but also letting your kid have that autonomy to be able to speak and say, like, I will not be talked to this way, even though it might be a corrective way and it could be done with the best of intentions, because sometimes kids do sensationalize things. I think of my son, who some days he comes home and says his teacher yelled at him. My wife and I know his teacher. We know how much she cares about him as a student. She's never yelled at him. It's just how his mind perceives the correction. So how do you handle that as, like, in a parent space?
You know, understanding that he may feel like she's yelling at him, if she has to get firm and maybe her voice goes up a little bit. Remember, my kids used to say to my husband, stop yelling. And he was just being firmer. They both can remember when I yelled at them when I was driving, because they both screamed and I was like, don't ever do that again. And I was, because I thought something was going to get hit or something.
Yeah.
I'm not a yeller, but he was firm. And so they would say that was yelling. And so whenever they would say that about the coach was yelling and she's so mean, the teacher did this, tell me what happened. And then they would tell you, you know, And if it was something I got concerned about, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to come sit in the classroom, or I'm going to come to the lunch and I'm going to sit in the lunchroom and listen to her. Like if the lunchroom lady was being mean or whatever, you know, not to discount, because maybe there is something happening, but not to also be that parent that's like always, you know, hovering, because they need to figure it out as well. So when a child begins because I really think that too, when people call it the terrible twos, mm-hmm. when they start to learn that independence and they're kind of, I got this, you know, and they're all, oh my God, they're so full of themselves. They're so cute. And yet we need to help them understand, like, we don't hit people and we don't, like, you know, trying to think of an activity or an action that they do, but I haven't had a 2-year-old in my home in a long time, but I think that we help them understand what is okay and what is not okay. So for instance, I remember when you disagree with a teacher, there's a way to talk to your teacher that is respectful. And if it isn't, then we need to talk about exactly what's happening. Not they're mean or they're not nice or they don't like me. Tell me exactly what's happening and try, as desperately as I'm such an emotional person, you know, try to take the emotion out of it and hear what's happening, which is something my husband was much better at, to be frank. So it was a good team. But really for them to learn that, I can remember, and you talk about the terrible teens or the teen, you didn't say terrible teens. Teen years that are coming, and some start at 9 and some start at 10 and some are like, you can see them at 8. You're like, oh my gosh, gonna be a long decade here. And we can remember 13 to 17 for our daughter, that I was, oh my gosh, like upstairs she'd go crying and downstairs she'd come screaming and you're like, what happened? And she'd go upstairs and she was talking again. Back down, I'm like, I don't even know, who is this person? And you talk to your friends though and you go, yeah, mine too. Okay, good, good. Because I need more coffee time with y'all, because I didn't realize this was supposed to be how we were. Nothing was really like that in the house I grew up in. So I didn't understand that that's how teenage years are. And so it was a lot of learning, but one of my favorite lines ever for my daughter in particular, and my son, he was a lot more even keeled. He still is to this day. But to say to her, you've probably forgotten who you're talking to.
Yeah.
Why don't we try that again? And it was always a sign to her that that is all. Like, enough. Like, okay, you've stepped over the line, try it again. And my husband would say, this is not open for discussion. Like, this is what's happening, right? And so, but they knew also that there was a lot that was open for discussion, because I think that what I used to say to my friends, they'd hear Samantha talk back. And I'm like, you know what? If I don't teach her how to respectfully disagree, she's going to wind up like I was. Don't question authority. Don't ever think that something your parent, your grandparent, your aunt or uncle would do something wrong. They're perfect. They are adults. And like, that's how I was raised. The expectation is they knew everything what they were doing and did it well. I mean, that was sort of what was built up. And so I'll take full responsibility for teaching her to question authority. As a result, I mean, I'm not going to go on a tirade about the amazing adult. I like her. I used to say to my friends, I like her a lot. I love her to death, but I like her. And the reason I think is because she understood, not perfect, she's a human as well. My son's a human. They understood that there was a line there. Like when you speak to a professor, when you go off to school, you become an electrician, you're in class, and you think he is just not as smart as you'd like them to be.
Yeah.
That's not your right to go up there and start having a tirade. And you understand that that's another human and you talk to them respectfully.
Yeah.
And that has to be taught at home, right? Yeah. Just like folks understand, if I want my child to be part of this community at a church, at a school, at a Brownies or softball or baseball, whatever, I have to teach them and I have to promote and support that. So it's the same kind of thing. I want you to understand that I expect you to learn how to advocate for yourself and how to take care of yourself. And when somebody is doing this or these things, you need to stand up for you in a respectful manner. And if something's a way that you can't, it's not working.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for. You need to talk to us. And that starts so young. The first time you say, honey, we're going to go clean your room. No. Okay. All right. Let's start by putting the toys just in the toy chest.
Yeah.
Okay. And also, I love talking to parents about 2-year-olds, teaching them, do you want to wear this today? No, that's our favorite word. How about this outfit or this outfit, right?
Yeah.
Giving them options and choices. They need to feel powerful about their own life. We know that about potty training. Like how many parents I used to laugh with them when they're, you know, their little ones going under the dining room table and pooping in their diaper. And they're like, why are you, it's like 10 feet to the bathroom. Why are you doing that? Because they're in control.
Yeah.
And oftentimes children aren't ready. that developmental thing we talked about, right? Mm-hmm. They're not ready, but it also, if it's push, 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 it becomes theirs versus yours, and they're not giving it up. So I think that as parents, we can really teach a lot of that, especially as you are approaching those teen years, the way to be respectful and to understand that there's a line, you have stepped over that line. And as our, you know, I watch now my daughter managing other humans in her work, but also my son working together closely with people about things that he believes in. Like, they're all bringing something strong. They have great strength and protective factors. They're bringing good things to this relationship. And now that all has to be respected. But it also translates, Corey, you know, it translates to all things that we want our children to be or learn or not. And we get to teach them that in their home. And hopefully then it's affirmed in their school or in their, if they have a faith community or whatever it may be, it's all affirmed there for you. So you have a community built around this. And now you're not standing out on your own out there, but, you know, and also, as you have said, you know, being that really involved dad, you know, being, he knows he's got you, and that sends them. I know you've seen this, the little ones, they leave away from mom and dad and then they come back and they check, hey, you're there. Okay, good. They come back and they wander around little, and they're little toddlers. Some just go. I mean, I had one of each. And so for you also as adults, they get some check back at home. Some never come back home again. Some, you know, they're all different. Yeah. And for you to acknowledge and love and totally respect and honor that difference, but then for them to realize he loves me no matter what. My dad's in my corner. And so they can tell you anything. I don't know any other way to do it. That doesn't come from a doctorate or anything like that. It comes from life experience to understand that really, if we help them to be that person who can speak respectfully and be respectful, but also understand that that's the relationship we have. I got
you. Yeah. I think there's something, there's a strength to that too. My son, of course, I bring him up because he's my template for my whole experience as a parent. There are times where, you know, I have to correct him as parents do. And I say, buddy, I used to say, the good news is, man, like, you have unconditional love here. Like, there is nothing you could do that I would not want to be your dad. And when he was younger, I used to tell him, I'd say, Harrison, his name was Harrison. Shout out to Harrison. I would say, Harrison, you know, buddy, if we'd have a bad day and I'd go tuck him in bed, and usually he'll yell at me and not want me to be there for bedtime. Then he'll ask for me later on via Alexa, you know, or something, or call down to me. I'll go upstairs and he'll want a hug goodnight or me to stay there for a few minutes. And I'll say, buddy, you know, if I could choose between a kid who's perfect and does everything right, or if I could choose, or if I had to choose between you and a kid who's like perfect, I would choose you every day of the week, buddy. And I just remind him, I said, buddy, I will never run out of love or care or patience for you. I said, some days dad might get a little short, you know, and dad's not perfect, but the love always exists. Everything we do, mom and I do for you, is rooted in love and wanting to help you be the best version of yourself. So that's what we do. Yeah.
And not to have him ever feel, no matter he's 3 or 33, that there's ever a question that you're there for him. And so he just needs to tell you. And the truth, that's the other thing. The truth is what you expect.
Yeah.
So we went through a phase, we've gone through a phase, and I've talked to many, many parents go through a phase where kids get to be what I call excellent storytellers. Mm-hmm. You know, to understand that that is done with creativity, and oftentimes maybe they're avoiding some trouble. Maybe they know they did something they shouldn't have done, but to help them learn to tell the truth. And that if you tell me the truth, things are going to be a lot better than if you try to make up a story. Because honestly, I don't know what we're given, what kind of antenna we have that says story, like, that is not what happened. I know that's not what happened. I wasn't even there. And I can tell because you're making a little smirk over here, or you're breathing heavier, or whatever you're doing. Because we know our children, if we've had that time with them really and focused on the amazing beings that they are, you know them. And so I know you're not telling me the truth, honey. I know it. So you want to go back up to your room and think about it for a minute? And I'd like to hear what happened. And remember some of those things, like, oh my God, please tell me the truth. Please, please, please tell me the truth. Stop going up there and figure out, because you knew that you are so creating such a story. And parents would say, what am I supposed to do? He's lying. I guess that's one way of looking at it. We got to teach him how to tell the truth. And I did. I mean, I was very frightened because I thought, wow, this is not a good pattern. You can't, when you hear children, they're lying and lying and lying and lying. That's not a good pattern. We got to break it, right? And because it can lead to other issues, but how? And to help that child understand that it's always going to be better for you if you just tell the truth. always. And even if it's not better for you, it's the right thing to do. Let's get there. But when they're little, it's always out personal interest, right? Like what's good for me. So just to help them understand that that's the right thing to tell us what happened.
I love that so much. We've definitely I know we had notes and we had plans, but I love where the conversation is going. I'm going to come back to it a little bit just because I want to talk about, this is also my way of teasing for the next episode, because May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and we're going to talk about the importance of parents, positive parenting, and recognizing the role you play in helping prevent abuse and neglect for your child. I think that goes, with stress management, that includes positive discipline, and not disciplining a child out of reaction. Mm-hmm. I think it's also communication skills, like you said, but I think we have to acknowledge all those things that parents sometimes are, I think about amazing moms, both my wife and the people in who are in roles. I think of moms first initially, but it could be any person, a caregiver who is more involved with the children. They take it all on. And a lot of times they'll forsake themselves and their own self-care because the family has to be taken care of and things have to get done. And sometimes that lends to more stress, to more burnout, to, especially some people, they deal long-term with postpartum depression or mental health issues that exist even outside having a child. And so, let's talk about just some thoughts you have and ideas you can suggest for positive parenting to avoid abuse and neglect.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'll just echo again that we all need support at some point. And so even if you feel like you had the best parents ever, they were human. So there's likely an area that they didn't understand or that you don't understand that having other support, professional intervention, like in education, like understanding, developmentally appropriate. I mean, who knows what a two-year-old, all you heard was terrible twos. And what does that mean? That they're going to say no to everything? Good. Now, what do we do with that? That's totally developmentally normal. So I think for me, I want to make sure that parents are understanding that children want you. They want to please you, especially little ones, this group 0 to 5. I mean, they just want you to love them. They want to do the right thing. That's why oftentimes when you ask a child over and over and over, they're going to change their story. You might think it's lying. They are just trying to figure out, what do you want me to say? I just want to tell you the right thing so you'll stop asking me, but I also really just want you to love me. I just want you to appreciate me and approve of me. So I'm trying to do the right thing. Yes. And so as positive parenting goes, to understand your child fully, to really spend the time, and I'll go back, the quality time is priceless, because to understand who they are. And I remember, in my own experiences talking to parents and having them say, but your child's not perfect. I said, no, my child is who they are. And I understand this is where they are really excelling. And it's as simple as we want our children to play baseball, but what they're really good is at piano, right? They love piano. Then we should really, I don't understand piano. I don't know how to do piano. Okay, let's figure that out. Let's get them somebody who can, doesn't have to be inexpensive. We can find somebody who will either be paid a little bit, or our first son's drum teacher was the drumline, what do you call those, majors in the
drum major,
high school. He just came to show him. I was like, does he have any talent? Like, I don't even know. Is this something we should pursue? And oh my gosh, it was like off to the races. Well, we thought he'd be playing soccer his whole life because he loved soccer until he discovered drumming. And so for us, and I'll say this very candidly, I had no idea what I was doing. I always wanted to play drums because I thought they were cool, but I didn't know anything about it. It was my job to figure out, this child has this creative skill and talent, and let's develop it. And he also has a great skill. He's a great sense of humor. Okay, let's really honor that. Sometimes it may not be funny. Sometimes it might even be inappropriate, but now we're going to teach him what's inappropriate and what's appropriate, right? That's my job. And so as a parent, to understand who they are fully and learn and get that fact that they're just little humans like you, to help them understand you're doing the best you can. We don't say that all the time. We don't have to keep saying, I'm doing the best I can. But when there's an issue and there's something, wow, I really blew that. Mommy did not mean to say that. And I am so sorry. I love you so much. Let's go back and try that again. And I would just, here's what I did, because I didn't have a role model. And then I'd see a friend do something. I'm like, Dang, that's such a good way to do that. Next time I'm going to handle it that way. And I understand that oftentimes we want to be everything to our children, but quite the opposite. When we let them see how human we are, there's more for them to relate to. And we allow them to be children or people who make a mistake and learn how to say, I'm sorry, I got to fix that and I'll do it and I'll get it right next time. And I think it helps them through their entire childhood and adulthood and into whatever careers they choose to understand that nobody should ever expect you to be perfect. And I know, and I teach, like now we're focused on our Clifton strengths and our team, our staff here, trying to understand what is it that you really do well that you bring to this work? Because I want to make sure we utilize every bit of it. And that's what I say about our children. Allow them, if they're really good at math, and you know, I don't know math. I don't, listen, fourth grade, I wasn't that great at it. But if my child loves it and thinks that's amazing or has a real analytical mind, like I shared earlier about speaking, and I was like, I don't know what my daughter was talking about. And it was my job to figure that out and to understand who she was and what was going to work for her and what wasn't. But it also to handle that sassiness or what some of our friends called me, this, she's so bossy. I know. And then listen to what that means to them. Well, she always wants to take the lead. She always wants to tell us what to do. I'm like, yep, I get that. She does. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, I'm not going to say, oh my gosh, my daughter? No. So help her to understand, you know, this is a strength, but how do we use it? And so I guess in my mind, you know, as parents, for us to understand our children, to be the best, what we used to say, the best teacher, like teacher, parents as teachers, right? That curriculum that talks about parents who know their children, who are their best teachers. Children want to learn from you, and especially our little ones we're talking about mostly here today, the birth to five, birth to eight, those, they just want your love. Like at teenagers, they still want your love. They don't, doesn't feel like it always, but that's what they want. They need that. They need your love and guidance more than ever, likely. And so when we're with the little ones and we're getting angry and we realize, what am I doing here? They're two. Yeah. They just didn't clean their room or they didn't put their socks away or whatever it was. They're two. And so our job is to help them learn and to understand this is their skills. This is, that's how do we teach? How do we learn? And how do we be as strong as we can be as a parent, to accept the help that we definitely need. And that's why I feel so strongly about the protective factors, strengthening families, parent support. We used to call it parent education, and some parents were like, I don't like that. Like, what kind of supporting? We all need support at some point, and that's true, whether it's formal education or some kind of training or whatever. The first time someone showed me how to do a timeout properly, I understood it because you're taking them out of the action. Like if we're all having fun playing a game and you decided to throw pieces at me, it's time for you to have a moment to think about that. And so if you take you out of the game and all you want in the world is to play Candyland with the family and I took you out, that is the worst. And it's like a minute. It's 2 minutes. It's not a, like, you know, not in the closet for a day. I'm not talking about abuse and neglect. We're talking about teaching them something. And as parents, we teach them how to regulate. It just goes to the protective factors. It just goes to helping them learn that.
Well, Suzanne, this has been such a good session talking with you. And again, like I had an idea of where things would, I always write notes for myself, but the conversation just, it went so many great places. And I'm really grateful for that. And I'm really grateful for all the work you and your team do at Children Trust Michigan. Let's talk about resources that are available to folks. And of course, obviously your website, CTM.org, correct?
Yes. If they put childrentrustmichigan.org, I think you can go CTM.org and it'll show up, but childrentrustmichigan.org is where I know that'll take you to our site. And what they'll find is the partners, and then there's a resource section. And so we are part of organizations like Prevent Child Abuse America and the Children's Trust Fund Alliance and Child Welfare League of America. Those are more national and statewide sort of resources. But if you go to the parent partner map or the prevention partner map, you'll see what's locally available to you. And once you're there, the good thing is not all of our programs look the same. So if you go looking for a birth to eight program, what you may find is that that organization is really focused on fatherhood programming because there wasn't a lot of that there. So you'll get the reference to something else where it'll work for you. I think I want to say that resources are for moms that are busy, dads that are busy at 2 in the morning when the child's just gone back to bed and you're like, well, great, now I'm awake. You can go and look, what do I do when they won't stop pooping in their diaper? It seems so silly, doesn't it? That we really stress about that, but we do. Yeah. It's the same thing we do at the time when used to be information from Prevent Child Abuse America was that children were most at risk at the time when they were potty training. And the time, one of the times was also when they got grades in school because parents had expectations and they weren't met. And so for children, you know, to understand for them, for parents to understand that the child's doing their best, or if they're not, we can talk through that. But there's resources to understand what the child's capable of and what you can do to help. And whether it's Children Trust Michigan or, you know, plugging into our programs, a lot of them are providing parent cafes, which is a place where listening to what the needs are of the community, but also learning to hear, oh my gosh, wow, I didn't know that was available. Other dads, other moms, other grandparents who are raising their grandkids, whomever it may be, but learning about what's in your community and what we can do to change things for our kids, to keep their home and community, school, whatever, wherever they are, to keep it as safe and as positive as possible.
And of course, I will plug that Family Futures is a family resource center as well. Many of the things Suzanne talked about today, we're part of, and we're very deeply invested in helping parents understand all those things.
Thank you.
I think it's important to recognize that resource. Suzanne, thank you so much for being here today. It's such a pleasure to talk to you. And is there anything, because April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, anything people can do to help show their support for this, the Awareness Month, anything they can do to help advocate on a bigger scale?
I think there's a wonderful part of April is Child Abuse Prevention Month. On April 4th is Wear Blue Day, but quite frankly, it's really about elevating the awareness around child abuse prevention. So you can wear blue any day you want in the entire month. Yes. And also, we do have a rally here in mid-April. It also happens to be the same day as a great event at Family Futures, so we wouldn't want to detract from that. But we do have some great Family Futures folks coming to join us as well, which is wonderful. But it's really for us about one of the key components about child abuse and neglect prevention is to raise awareness so that people can understand that there's something they can do. And I would urge anyone who's listening to get involved. Sometimes all you can do is give time. Sometimes all you can do is give money. Sometimes you can give both. Get engaged in knowing that you have something to do with making sure our kids are safe and happy and healthy in your community. And I thank you for listening, because clearly you care about children or you wouldn't be listening.
Thank you to everyone who listened to today's episode. And of course, familyfeatures.org for information about the resources we offer. TM.org for the at-large community about what they offer. Of course, you can always leave in comments if you have any questions, and we'll talk to you next time.